Live and local, across the Ribble Valley, 106.7. This is Ribble FM.
I'd like to welcome to the Backseat Driver Radio Show a man who, I think it's safe to say, stock car racing has exceeded being a passion. And along with a friend of his, Paul Tully, has produced a book called It's Not All About the Racing. It is a vast and weighty tome, to a degree you won't want it dropping on your foot, of stock car racing, but it's not the racing. It's the pits, the paddocks, the personalities and everything else. And I'll be quite honest, it's the first time I've featured stock car racing on the show. It's not something I know a lot about, apart from the fact many, many, many moons ago, I used to go to Blackburn, the Greyhound track where they used to race stock cars, and Bradford, where they used to race stock cars. But it is still a passionate sport, and from what I can gather, it's as intense as any racing. So, Ian Bannister, welcome to the Backseat Driver.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Mark.
What brought all this on, and where does the passion for stock cars come from?
Oh, it goes back. Well, I'm 60, so I was born in 1963, and I started going to watch stock car racing to follow a local driver at the time called Len Wolfenden.
Which I think, just putting in, is one of the most famous names in the sport.
Well, it's one of the famous names in the sport. He won the world final in 1981. I started watching stock cars at Nelson in 1974, I think it was.
Yes.
And it was on and off. It was maybe five, six, seven times a year. And then in 1976-77 season, my dad introduced me to a colleague of his, and it was called Howard, who was a photographer, and we travelled to meetings together. Now, in 1977, I was only 14, 15 year old, yep. So I couldn't drive. I went to Nelson on my bike occasionally. I went on the bus. Used to get off at Reedyford Hospital at Nelson, which is not there anymore because that got demolished for the motorway. And I went to Nelson and I got hooked. Nelson was a shale or a dirt track, as you would call it. Two different services stock cars race on.
Yep.
One is tarmac and one is shale. Nelson was a shale track, and it was what got me hooked, I could say, on stock car racing. And
I mean, just putting in, when I went, I mean, you are close to it. You're not waiting for them to come round in a minute, 30 seconds.
No, you can see
it there. You can see all the lot of
it. You can see the whole track. It's a short oval. They're normally about 350 metres long, so yeah. You can imagine it's like, I think a running track's 400 metres, is it? Yeah. Something like that. So you're talking like about the size of an athletics running track.
Well, just like I said, Blackburn was a Greyhound track.
It was, but there was a Greyhound track running around the outside, and then you've got your track in the middle for your start. Because Blackburn was a tarmac track, so you didn't quite get quite as dirty or as dusty. Blackburn opened, in effect, to compensate for the loss of Nelson.
Right.
Because when the M65 opened, when they started to construct the M65, Nelson, sadly, because it was in the path of it, and you can still see the Nelson track at the moment, if you just before you get to the turn off where Nelson and Corn College is and the Thatcher Thistle and Nelson Cricket Club, it's just at the side of the motorway there.
Yeah, right.
And I believe they're just starting some construction work there now.
Yeah.
But that was where Nelson was. That closed in the end of 1979 was the last meeting, and then Blackburn opened in 1979, I think, and that sort of took over the reins for about 4 or 5 years from Nelson.
But I always remember to. I used to sit in posh bit inside if it was a bad night.
Oh yeah.
I think it was a glorious total of about 50 pence to join, but it gave you easy access to a pint and a pie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, at 13-year-old, the pint wasn't really on my agenda at that time. The pint, definitely not. Pie maybe, but pie. And Nelson, it was pies covered in shale because it was a very dusty track. So that's where my interest peaks, in effect. And around here, then we had a plethora of tracks. We had Nelson up until 1979. Then we had Blackburn and Rochdale, White City, Bellevue. We got Odsall, which is in Bradford. We got Sheffield. In later times, we had a track at Bolton. We have Buxton, and then also a typical week. A typical week for me back in the 80s could have been travelling. I would say Friday night, say, going to Bradford for a meeting at Odsall. On Saturday, it could be Blackburn. I tended to go where my driver went, which was Len Wolfenden. I'd go to whichever track he was going to. So it could be Blackburn, but conversely, it could be a Bellevue. It could be at Leicester. It could be Long Eaton. Could be Coventry. Sunday could be Rochdale. Could be Aycliffe or Hartlepool. But conversely, the other way, it could be down at Northampton.
Yeah.
Monday nights was normally a Sheffield night. And then Wednesday could be at Skegness. So there was quite a lot of driving involved. I think one year I put on 70 or 80,000 miles on my Mark II Cortina. And that was quite the norm. There was always three or four of us went. You're never on your own. Fill the car up. Everybody chips in for the petrol and makes it a good night. And I always took my camera. So taking my camera was a big part of it. And that's when I started taking photographs. For a while,
saying before we went on air, you still have your Kodak Instant, haven't you?
I've still got that. I was bought that for a present. I think I was 12, maybe in 13. I went to school in Burnley, went to Townley School, and my physics teacher, or science teacher, whatever, I can't remember what it was, nevertheless, I think it was physics, was well into photography. And we used to borrow cameras from school, and then my mum and dad bought me this Kodak Instamatic, and I've still got it to today in its little plastic case. It had little 1-2-6 cartridge films. Then I got a little, or really, even smaller one, which wasn't as good, which had 110 cartridge films. Yeah. And then I moved on to an SLR camera that had 35mm. I've had lots of cameras in time, but I've still got 90% of my original cameras. They're all in a wardrobe. Or I just don't throw them. I don't know why. They're not good to anybody. They're probably not worth anything, but it's just that, no, my first one, I'm going to keep that. Oh, I use that for this. So that's how I got involved in photography. I used to take pictures. And what people can't appreciate when you talk to people today is you go to a Stockholm meeting and you take three films with you, and then from the younger people today, they go, films? Yeah, you put your film in the back of the camera, you take 36 pictures, you've no idea what that picture's like until you take it home that night, you take it out the camera, on the Monday morning, you go to the chemist, you put them in a little bag, you used to Hartley's chemist in Burnley, you drop the photographs off, a week later, you go and pick them up, sometimes on the Friday, if you were quite good, you'd get 36 pictures per film, so that's obviously three packets of photos, you go through and you might have 30 or 40 pictures that are half decent.
Yeah.
Some of them have the little stickers on that's telling you how to, you should get them in better focus. And then the following weekend, you'd take them to tracks and you'd try and sell them.
Yeah.
And you'd sell them at maybe 30, 40 pence a piece, and you might make enough money to either pay your entrance fee or to buy another film or to even cover some petrol money. And I did that for quite a number of years. And I attended quite regularly up until the mid-1980s, getting towards the late 1980s. But then when children come along and family takes over and work started to get a little bit busy, I started working outside of Burnley then, and my attendance dropped off considerably, and then it dwindled away for a number of years, in 20 or 30 years, where I attended sporadically. And then I got back into the sport by the same person who introduced me to the sport, invited me to go to Bellevue.
Yeah.
A good number of years ago. And I'm just about to get to the stage where I was about to retire from my full-time job, which was working in education. And I got back into stock cars, and I've got back into it in quite a big way. I'm retired, so I don't have any other commitments other than family commitments.
Yes.
And so I can attend more meetings now. And I mean, the bug has bitten me again. I take a lot more pictures now because it's digital. You can take lots more pictures, and if you don't like them, you can delete them.
You don't have to save up for rolls of 35mm 36 exposure anymore.
Exactly. And to get 36 exposure films developed now, I think costs you about £20. I'm not mistaken. My son's got a little film camera. He works at Manchester Met, and he works with media, and he's into photography as well. And he's just bought a film camera, and I'm sure he said it was about £20 to get 36 prints, which
so
is
long.
Exactly, it's extortionate. So I do take a lot of pictures, but what I don't do, and you've just mentioned it when you spoke about the book, is I don't take pictures of the racing, because what I used to find is when I used to take racing pictures, you spend the whole race taking the pictures from the outside or from the centre, you take all the photographs, and then you turn to the other photographer you stood with and you say, who won?
Yeah.
Because you're concentrating that much on getting those pictures, getting the right picture, getting the right exposure, getting the right angle. If you want to get a picture of a car moving, you're better off getting a bit of motion blur so it looks a bit like they're moving. I don't like pictures where all the wheels are stopped dead, like it could be stopped, but you know it's not. So nowadays,
the other thing is, I'm not being funny. If you are stood with three other photographers, ultimately you're all more or less taking the same photograph.
Yeah, potentially. That's exactly what you're doing. But bear in mind, nowadays, my camera at the moment takes 24 frames a second.
Yeah.
Then days, it was a case of one click, move the lever, wind it on, one click. So if a car's passing you on a bend, you might get three pictures if you look at it. Nowadays, I could take 150 pictures while a car's going around one bend.
Yeah.
Now, fair enough, a lot of them are absolute rubbish. They're out blurred, they're out of focus, the car's moved out the frame, there's other cars in the way, there's somebody stood in front of you, but there might be that one little gem. But as I say, I don't take racing pictures then.
Yeah.
I take a lot of pictures that are more, I would say journalistic, more telling a story.
Yeah.
So I like to go in.
Proper photojournalism.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not a journalist. I mean, I'm an engineer by trade. I'm a fabricator and welder by trade. And I've worked in banking and I've worked in education. So I am not a journalist by any means. But taking a picture that tells a story more than a car going sideways around a track, There's plenty of photographers take pictures at stock car meetings who take absolutely spot on fantastic pictures, a lot better than I could take of racing cars because they've got years of experience. I don't have that passion to do that. So I prefer to get the pictures from the outside of what's going on, of the cars on the grid or people getting out of cars. I like to go into the pits and get pictures of the mechanics and the teams fixing the cars, or the drivers posing, giving the trophy away to a little child, or get a picture of a driver being interviewed by a TV camera and get that as a picture, or a driver with his family. And as you can see in the book, there's quite a lot of pictures there that tell a story. That it's odd because stock car racing is different to a lot of other racing because everything's accessible. So once the racing's finished, a driver is on track for probably 35, 40, maybe 50 minutes a meeting.
Yes.
And they do, say, 2 16-lap races, a 20-lap race, and maybe another 16-lap race.
Yeah.
But every single person in that stadium can go back into the pits and see what's going on, look at the cars being fixed. And quite recently, I do quite a bit of work now for the BSCDA, which is the British Stock Car Drivers Association. I do a lot of their media work. I take a lot of their photographs. And recently, we've had the last couple of years, I mentioned this to you earlier before we started this, was we've had the British touring car drivers come along to do like a feature race where they borrow cars and they can go and do exactly what they can't do in their cars, which is bump into people, knock them out the way. And they've absolutely loved it. And what a lot of their fans who come along because they promote it on their social media channels, they don't understand that you can watch the racing, then you can actually go into the pits and speak to the actual drivers and you can get close up to them and they'll explain what's going on and what made this decision and why that happened and why they pulled off in the race. But with a lot of more elite sport, that doesn't happen. The drivers are all kept away. They're in isolation. They're in little silos. They're on the infield, the fans are on the outside, and you don't have that access. And through the book that we've done, which is what we're talking about now, is we're trying to bring a lot of what a lot of people don't ever see to the people. So, so in essence, a lot of people who watch stock car racing never go in the pits. They can do.
Yeah.
Open access at the majority of tracks. You can't. It's not quite as open access at a couple of the tracks, but at the majority of tracks, pit access is completely open.
Yes.
You've just got to be careful. I mean, the whole sport is geared up and is governed by health and safety.
Yeah.
The cars are built in a way that they protect the driver. It's a full contact sport, unlike Formula One that you see on TV with sort of your Lewis Hamiltons and your elite Formula One drivers. They all start at the front.
Yep.
In stock car racing, the best drivers start at the back. So if you're going to win a race, you've got to pass everybody else on the track to win a race. And you get further put back on the grid based on how many points you have.
Yeah.
So for every race you take part in, you can score points. The more points you get a different roof colour.
Live and local, across the Ribble Valley, we are Ribble FM.
The voice of the valley. 106.7 Ribble FM.
Taking pictures or video with your phone? Want to take your passion to the next level? UK Digital have been a leading photographic retailer for the last 20 years. And yes, we are based locally in Clitheroe. Come and see one of the team at UK Digital for friendly, professional advice on all aspects of photography and video. Our showroom is open weekdays, so you can see, touch and try. And with internet prices, there's no need for you to chance it online. UK Digital, your local store with internet prices. Visit ukdigital.co.uk.
Hey, have you lost weight?
No, I've just had my bra fitted properly, so everything is right where it should be. Remember, any good outfit starts with the right foundations. If your boobs aren't up where they should be, being supported and making you feel comfortable, then nothing is going to look or feel right. You wouldn't put a size 7 foot in a size 3 shoe now, would you? Perfect Fit by Carol, with more sizes than you can imagine, and fitting so easy. There's no tape measures involved. It's practically magic. You'll wonder why you didn't visit sooner. Visit them on King Street, Clitheroe, or check out their Facebook page. Perfect Fit by Carol, getting you your perfect fit.
Spring's here full of fresh colours and bright new ideas. Just in time for Ramsbottom Kitchen Company's spring sale. Now with up to 50% off selected kitchens, RKC have been helping people create their dream kitchens for over 30 years. Full of ideas and inspiration, visit our huge showroom, discover the latest colours and styles, and let us bring your new kitchen to life with our free design and planning service. Your dream kitchen? Easy as RKC. Now with up to 50% off, just search Ramsbottom Kitchens.
Premier Chadburn Village Store does exactly what it says on the tin. A local convenience store, run by local people, that offers the cheapest 24/7 pay-at-the-pump fuel, comprehensive range of groceries, and we're also a payzone provider for bill payments and mobile top-ups. Open from 6am until 9pm, we're here when you need us.
Chadburn Village Store, open when you need us most.
Spring has sprung in the Ribble Valley, and it's blooming beautiful at Shackleton's Home and Garden in Chadburn. Discover vibrant, colourful pot plants, sprouting bulbs, and stunning specimen trees ready to bring your garden to life. Thinking ahead to summer? Our huge range of stylish garden furniture is ready for you. Lovely looking lawns, colourful beds, stunning furniture. Make a day of it and visit our store in Chapman. Shackleton's. Experience different.
Take till there ain't no more.
Ribble Radio. It has to be Ribble FM.
So we're going to say that's the big thing I always remember about it. It's roof colours. And I think the champion each year got a gold roof, didn't he?
Well, there's two different champions. There's quite a few different championships in effect. Yeah. There's four major ones. You've got your National Point Championship, which is the bigger, which is what drivers race all year for. You've got your World Champion, which is the second one. You've got your European Championship and your British Championship.
Yeah.
Those four championships each attract and earn that driver a different roof colour. Gold roof, a silver roof, a black and white checkered roof, and a yellow and red checkered roof. Now,
do they ever have to try and combine roof colours if they've done well enough?
They do. Last year, one driver, Tom Harris, who's one of the best drivers we have in the country at the moment, he won the World Final, he won the European, and he also won the National Points Championship. So in effect, he's got a silver roof with a gold roof and a red and yellow checkered roof. So he sort of had a gold wing, you have silver stripes on it, and have like a wave of maybe red and yellow checkers. And another driver called Finn Sargent, he's one of our up-and-coming young drivers, really good driver, really nice lad. Him and his dad both drive. He won the British Championship as a result of that incident on the front of the book.
Yeah, because that, the one, I'll mention this now, every image in the book is, what the term, a static image. Some are candid, some are posed, some are, like I'm looking at one mechanic, balancing a wheel and tyre. The only action image is on the front cover.
That's correct.
And it's one stock car on top of another one.
It is, and that was at the British Championship. It was at Heddenston Hills, which is in Staffordshire, near Cannock and New Toxeter. It's around that area. I think it's a former quarry or a reservoir. I don't know what it is, but it's a bowl,
yeah.
A natural bowl, excellent viewing. It's a tarmac track. And the two drivers on the front of the book, the one underneath is called Ryan Harrison, another one of our top drivers, and an up-and-coming driver on the top is called Catherine Harris. She had the faster car. She was driving a brilliant race. And in the last bend, she'd been trying to pass him for a good few number of laps. She was on his back bumper all the time, but he was holding her off. So she did what they do in stock car racing. You have a last bender. You think, like,
it's no way
I'm going for it. She went for it. It didn't come off. It produced quite a spectacular end to the race with Catherine going up and over the top of Ryan's car, finishing on its side. Both drivers were absolutely fine. As I say, the cars are built to take this type of hammer. And the Finn Sargent, who I mentioned to you, he just came through. He was in third place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll have that checkered, black and white checkered roof this year. But that actually isn't a racing picture. It's the end of a sequence of pictures. There's about 20 pictures. Those were taken by Paul Tuller, who's my fellow contributor to the book. Paul took those series of pictures, and we thought, it's actually not a racing picture. It's not two cars going sideways around a track. That's actually quite a fundamental picture that shows what can happen, and that is the outcome of a coming together on track. And that's what the sport is about. It's about providing entertainment, but also being safe. I think that's one of the key things we've got to stress.
Well, it's like I've always said, and funnily enough, I was talking to somebody earlier today, if you don't want injury in a racing car or on a racing bike, don't get in it or don't get on it. That is the best way of going about it.
That's
true.
It's
like we said, the clue to what is contained in the book is in its title. It's not all about the racing.
That's true. And as you quite rightly said, you've had a look through the book, and there isn't a single racing picture in. Well, there is actually. There are two racing pictures in there. But when you look at them, the cars are blurred.
Yes.
And that's on purpose, because the thing that's in focus is Mr. Starter with his flag.
Yes.
And when both those pictures, I took those, I wasn't focusing on the cars. I wanted the cars in the picture, but I'm focused on the starter with the checkered flag.
It's more or less static, and the cars are moving, so the cars will naturally blur.
So that is there is a couple of racing pictures, but I'm not taking the racing pictures.
Yeah.
And everything else is everything that goes on around the periphery. And the book came about from, I've been taking these pictures quite a while now, for a good number of years, and other people have done them in the past.
Yeah.
I tend to share a lot of that type of picture, and I get quite a lot of good feedback, actually. I get very little negative feedback.
Yes.
There are some pictures I take that I would never share because there was a driver a few years ago who brought his brand new car out, rolled it on the first meeting, and he was in tears. And I didn't realise he was in tears. And I've got the picture, and I thought, that's going in the never-to-be-seen part.
Yeah.
Because it's just not fair. If anything else, it's not fair. But I take a lot of these pictures. Then I was at a meeting, I think it was at Mildenhall, which is down in Suffolk. That's probably one of the furthest journeys for me, about 5.5 hours from Burnley. And somebody said to me, you want to get these in a book? There's some cracking pictures there. How many do you share? I said, probably about 3 or 4% of what I take.
Yeah.
Because it takes me ages to get them downloaded onto a PC, look through them, cherry pick the best ones. I mean, I do a bit of Photoshop, don't get me wrong, I don't Photoshop them to death. I mean, might just put a bit of contrast in. If it's a bit dusty, get rid of a little bit of dust.
With a bit of cropping.
A bit of cropping, really, to make it, to frame the picture. And and I thought about it, and this is about 2 years ago now, and I thought, yeah, that's probably, it probably could do. But then you think, how long's that going to take? So anyway, myself and Paul Tully, who we worked together on this book for the last 18 months, had a meeting at Skegness about 18 months ago now. We said, are we to do it? Are we to do a book? And base it on next season. This was in 2022. Base it on the 2023 season.
Covers the 2023 season.
It does. That's it. It started off some pre-season stuff where I went down to drivers' garages. I went to drivers' workplaces. There's even a wedding in there. One of our...
Yes.
The British Stock Car Drivers Association, one of our colleagues, is called Jonathan Abbott, and he and his fiancée Lisa got married. And I went to do the photographs for their wedding, and there was quite a few stock car people there.
Yeah.
So I took some pictures, and I said to him, when we start this, do you mind if I put some of your wedding pictures?
Yeah.
And he went, no, I'd be honoured to do that.
Yeah.
And Jonathan's dad is involved in the sport as well. He is one of the people that help with in terms of race control on a race day. So
it's a strange thing. A lot of people like to appear in magazines, but a magazine has nowhere near the prestige of a book. People love to be in books.
They do, yeah. They do. And there's some pictures of some children in there as well. And people say, children, should we put in children? But every single child, I approach the parent, because most of them are either mini stock drivers, which is, they get in effect.
Right, it's the children's version.
The children's
version. There's no disrespect to them.
No, they're not. And to be honest with you, the mini stocks can be as aggressive, if not more sometimes, than some of the adults. And the kids can start in them, and when they're 10-year-old, they've got to finish on the 16th birthday or the day before the 16th birthday. And then they can move on either into Formula 2s, into Formula 1s, into saloons, into our V8 hot stocks, which is a different formula. They can move into any of those. But mini stocks, and what you will find if you look through the book, is a couple of driver's workshops I went to. One was a young lad called Borden Murphy, and he's based over in Brighouse. And I spoke to his mum, and I said, would you mind me coming over just to take some pictures of Borden in the garage? I said... Because what I want to show is, I want to show him, because he won the world final for the minis.
Yeah.
And I want to show him putting the gold roof on the car with his dad for the first time.
Yes.
And with all his trophies. And both his parents, his mum and his dad, John, said, of course you can, yeah, we'd love it. So I went over, and before I went over, I messaged his mum, and I just said, would you mind getting Borden to bring your school uniform? Mm-hmm. And I think at first of all, it's a case of, what?
Yeah.
I said, there's a reason for that. And so he went over and he brought his uniform because he was 13. He won it at Oddsall and he was 13-year-old. And I went across a week or so after he'd won the world final. I got the pictures and I said, will you put your school uniform on? And he asked me why. And I said, because what I want to show is what people will not realise is you've just won that race. You've driven a brilliant race. You've beaten another 32 cars around Oddsall, which is a very quick track.
Yeah.
It's a shale track. And you become the national champion or the world champion. You've got the gold roof. What people are going to forget is on a Monday morning, you put your school uniform on and you've got to go back to school
and
do your maths and your English and your history and your science and all that sort of stuff. You're doing your GCSEs, but not for another 2 years.
Yeah.
So, and it told a story, and that's one of the things I wanted to get over. And I went to another driver's workshop later in the year down in Leek, and the driver's called Craig Finnegan. His dad, Bert Finnegan, and if anybody's listening to this and they used to go watching stock cars, Bert was around in the 80s and the 90s. He's won the world final as well, and so has his son Craig. But he's now got two daughters who race.
Right.
Lily, who races Formula Ones like her dad, because there's no gender boundaries with our sport. There's no special races.
So we don't need Formula W in stock cars.
We do not. That is one thing. I'll come to a section, something else about that in a second. But one of Craig's youngest daughter is called Freya, and she races minis. And I got her to do the same thing. I said to Mum, can you get Freya to put a school uniform on just so I can get a picture with a bag on her shoulder with the stock car? And it's such a powerful message that not all these people are professional drivers. As a matter of fact, none of them are professional drivers. They all have a job.
Yeah.
Now, some of the jobs are building and selling and maintaining and hiring stock cars.
Yeah.
But most of the drivers have to have another employment to allow them to go stock car racing. It's not cheap. It's not a cheap sport.
And I think the other thing is showing a school boy or a school girl with the car. It's tangible proof that not every youngster is glued to a mobile phone or a computer game.
Exactly. I mean, I went to the Finnegan, to Craig's garage down in Leek, and there's a few pages in there on the garage. And the two girls, Freya and Lily, are both working on the car.
Yeah.
They're taking the discs off. They're taking the brake hubs off. So they're actually doing, and then Craig, who drives Formula 1s, he said to his eldest daughter, can you just change the diff oil in my car for for weekend racing? So it's like, it's getting more involved than just saying, dad, fix me car, I'm going to go on my PlayStation. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You get in the garage, you get
the way, other computer systems are available.
Yes, that's quite right, yeah. So, so it's a case of showing the flip side of the coin that it's not all about the racing, as the title of the book says.
Listen to Ribble FM anytime, anywhere. Download our dedicated smartphone app. Go to ribblefm.com.
106.7 Ribble FM.
Thousands of miles together. Every early start. Every late drive. When your BMW reaches 3 years old, it deserves expert care without the premium price. At Bowker BMW, our competitive service prices offer up to 40% discount on BMWs over 3 years old. Our expert technicians know your BMW inside out, and we only use genuine parts which come with a 2-year warranty. Book today. Search Bowker BMW in Blackburn or Preston.
Looking for a reliable, trustworthy skip hire service? A1 Skip Hire is here for all your waste management needs. Family run for over 20 years, ensuring your waste is handled responsibly and efficiently. Offering a wide range of skips to suit your every need, whether you're clearing out your garage, renovating your home, or managing construction waste. And because we care about our beautiful planet, all of your waste is processed at our fully licensed recycling plant. Maximum recycling and minimum landfill. Serving the entire Ribble Valley and Blackburn with Darwin. We're local and we're ready to help you manage your waste the right way.
Here are the numbers to call. For the Ribble Valley, 01200 360 035. And for Blackburn with Darwin, 01254 391 616.
It's time to redecorate, and Clitheroe Decorating Centre has you covered with a wide range of paints, including high-end designer brands like Benjamin Moore, as well as Crown, Dulux and Emperor, and to top it off, all the tools you might need to get the job done. Seeing a colour you like? Check out our colour wall or our paint matching service, which is available to all our customers, both trade and retail. Our friendly staff are always on hand to help offer best advice, tips and tricks. Just some of the benefits dealing with a local family-owned and Ribble Valley Business Award-winning store. Come browse our in-store exclusive offers at Clitheroe Decorating Centre on Shawbridge Street, Clitheroe, or give us a call on 01200 426 342.
After an accident, many drivers believe they must use their insurer's chosen repairer, but actually, you have the right to choose. James Alp has over 30 manufacturer approvals from Tesla, Land Rover, Jaguar, Audi, BMW, Mercedes and more. They offer free collection and delivery and provide a courtesy vehicle as standard, regardless of your policy. And if your insurer raises your excess for choosing your own repairer, James Alp could help you cover those costs too. Visit jamesalp.co.uk.
Craving something different? Discover Akila Street Food in Great Harwood, where homemade Indian-inspired street food dishes meet with a Lancashire twist. Sizzling curries, propadoms, fish pakoras, rolls, wraps, you name it. Every bite is crafted with love and passion for tasty treats. Lunch, dinner and even takeaway. It's the perfect place to tickle your taste buds. Akila Street Food, Great Harwood. Taste the fusion, taste the passion. Your taste buds will thank you. For more information, find us on Facebook.
106.7 Ribble FM.
I mean, the one thing, you've just described all the different formulas. When I used to watch it, the cores were, they were virtually like chassis made out of girders, a loosely formed what you might call old-fashioned American-style body of sorts stuck on, and underneath the bonnets used to be huge V8 Chevys and things like that. I mean, I conclude that's all changed, has it?
Well,
do they still consume Chevy V8s?
Everything you've said there has changed, bar one thing.
Yeah.
The last thing you mentioned, the V8 Chevys. So most 99% of the cars that race in the Formula One group race V8 Chevrolet engines.
Some have the only thing, they only have two gears, really, don't they?
They do, yes.
It's like first and second, and about second.
I'm going to mention something in a minute, and I'll sound really technical, but I haven't a clue what it means, but I'll tell you what it is about the gearbox. So they all use a V8 Chevy. Some use a small block, some use a big block.
Yeah.
Don't ask me what that means. I've heard drivers talk about it. Big block, small block. I presume it means the block's a bit bigger on the big block than is on the smaller, which is the small block.
The only thing I do remember is they sound phenomenal.
They do, and they don't sound quite as good nowadays because they silence where they didn't used to be.
Oh,
when
right.
You probably went to Blackburn, they were very, very unsilenced, literally raw pipes coming out off the cylinder head. So they use V8 Chevy. They use high tensile steel chassis that's purpose-built. They're built to very, very strict specifications.
Yeah.
It all sits around safety, like how many ports you roll cage, how thick the steel has to be. How many cross members you've got to have, the gap between all the steel rails inside the in the cab.
Yep.
They have to have a cross member on the back. There's quite a lot
technically like what you might call an F1 car to a degree, and a car that races at Le Mans. The driver sits within a safety cell.
They do, that's it, but it's a steel safety cell. The engine is forward of them and their back axle is aft of them, so the back axle is sort of behind the back of their seat.
Yeah.
Behind the seat they have a sort of a split chamber that's got the battery and the fuel cell in. Some of the batteries are, some of the fuel cells are obviously contained. They're all contained within sealed units. I think there's only enough fuel in a car to do a race, so you can't be carrying three races with the fuel. There's enough fuel to probably do 25 laps.
Yeah.
But it's all about safety. They use hands devices, so you might hear of hands device on Formula One. Well, stock car drivers use a hands device to keep them secure. They use 6-point harnesses. They are strapped in. I drove a car about 12 months ago at Skegness, a hire car of a local driver called Frankie Wayman, who's based in Silsden. I had to go in a hire car of his, and I got myself strapped in. I pulled them straps really tight, and I thought, I can't hardly breathe. Then he came along and made him a damn sight tighter than that.
That's what I used to do. I could never do it, because I used to get one of my mechanics to kindly stick his knee in my chest.
Yeah.
And tighten them up, you technically should not be able to move.
No, I mean, I couldn't. I mean, it was very, very... It was an experience, and I could never do a race. I mean, I have back problems, so I could never do a race. But going round Skegness for about 20 or 30 laps, and I probably wasn't going anywhere near as fast as a race, but just experiencing that gives you a completely different insight into what them guys do week in, week out. I was on my own on track. They've got 30 other cars with them, trying to knock them out the way.
Well, the other thing is you'll discover, instead of it just a car driving round, when you start driving a fast car fast, irrespective of it's a stock car, they suddenly come alive for you.
They do, and you notice that. I was very surprised how easy it was to turn in. Now, this is a tarmac track, so you've no back end drifting out and going sideways. It was just driving around. Now, it was a higher car, and I know I was told afterwards that because it was a higher car, it was set up to handle a lot easier, to corner easier. But you've still got to make it go around. And don't get me wrong, I am not for 1 minute saying I could compete in a race. As a matter of fact, I'll go on record as saying I could never compete in a race, but I did enjoy those 30-odd laps driving around Skegness, where the night before I'd been watching all the drivers drive around because it was the day after a meeting.
Yes.
And we were kindly given
All of a sudden, instead of being on the outside looking in, you're inside looking out.
Exactly. And it's... I mean, the odd thing is you're going down the back straight. They do between being 70 or 80 miles an hour. I wasn't doing that. I'm pretty sure I wasn't. But you're jumping down, then you jump on the brakes.
Yeah.
And then halfway in the bend, hit the accelerator again. That's probably not the right way to do it, but that's the way I did it, and I enjoyed it. But you're going past a plate fence, probably 2 or 3 inch, maybe 6 inch from your tyres, and it's sort of, ooh, if I were doing this on my own, great. But when there's like 5 or 6 people behind you trying to knock you out of the way,
somebody wants to be there
on your bit of tarmac, it certainly gives you a different insight into what those drivers go through.
Yeah. But as I said, it's a long while since I've been. I used to enjoy it when I were a lad, because it was a very raw form of racing. Also, the lads who drove and the lads and lasses, I mean, from the sounds of it, there's more women drive stock cars now than when I used to watch it. But they were a very down to earth lot. Don't take this wrong way. It used to be like a working class multi-sport.
I think to a degree it still is. I don't think it's the sort of sport now. I mean, you can buy into the sport. You can hire a car.
Yeah.
For about seven,
by the
8
way,
or
saying that is no disrespect to the working class.
I don't think anybody would take it that way. But you can hire a car now for £600-800. You can turn up at a meeting, what we call arrive and drive. You turn up with your safety gear, your crash helmet.
Yeah.
And you can drive, take part in a meeting along with every other driver.
Yeah.
Including the most experienced drivers in the world and the drivers that's never driven before. Going back to your other point, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier about, we do have far more female drivers than we used to across all the formulas.
Yeah.
Mini stocks, Formula 2s, V8s and Formula 1s.
And I'm actually all for it. I've interviewed a lot of lady racing drivers, and most lady racing drivers don't want to race in their own series. They want to race against lads.
Well, in terms of the four formulas I've just mentioned here, there is no discrimination.
Yeah.
When I say discrimination, what I mean is there's no demarcation lines.
Yeah.
If you get in a car, you're getting in the car with other drivers. I'm very careful in the book and in everything I post on social media. I never say a lady driver because it's a driver. And somebody said to me, towards the end of last year when this book came to light, people knew we were doing it, said, are you having a section about all our lady drivers? And I said, no. Oh, why not? Because he's look. I said, because I'm pretty sure that they would not want to be classed as female, lady, women drivers.
Yep.
They are drivers. And you see them, the picture on the front of the book, Catherine Harris there is obviously driving all over the top of Ryan Harrison's car. And she got out of the car and they shook hands and they went back into the pits and she was interviewed and Ryan was interviewed like any other driver. Nothing saying she's a woman, she's a female.
Well, I've always said,
there's no difference. The cars are the same. So the car is identical. It's got the same engine. It's everything's identical. The seat obviously will be in a position to fit that driver, be it a tall person, a short person, be it a female person, be it a male person. It doesn't matter. They're sat in that car and they are equal. And you will not know. You
can watch them racing. I've always said, when somebody puts a full set of racing overalls on and a full face helmet and they're in behind a wheel, you haven't got a clue who they are or what they are.
You haven't. And I mean, you asked a question a second ago. There seems to be a lot more female drivers in the sport, in every sport.
Yeah.
But in stock car racing, yes. When I was watching originally, when I started watching in the 70s and 80s, came through in the 1980s, there was a young lady called Jane Bean. And Jane was sort of the first one that I remember coming into the sport, doing well, winning races. There was another lady came in after her called Lisa Harter. She actually married another very good driver from a different stock car dynasty called the Smiths. And she was very successful. And now those were the main two as I was getting into watching stock car racing. Nowadays, there's loads and loads of women driving cars, and it's brilliant to see. It's an absolutely great phenomenon to see.
Now, we could probably talk for ages on this, but if somebody wants to get hold of It's Not All About the Racing by Ian Bannister and Paul Tully, how do they get hold of it?
Well, first of all, it's available at tracks. So if you're going to a track this year, our first meeting is at King's Lynn. Either myself or Paul, neither of us will be at that meeting, ironically, but they will be on sale.
Or how much are they?
The book costs £20. £20 plus postage. They're available from most meetings next year. And otherwise, it's available from our webpage, which is www.stocksbooks.co.uk. And they're available on there as well. And we do have a few left. We sold out in the first run. We got a number printed before Christmas. We thought we'd have them to sell all season.
Yeah.
And they'd all gone within 5 days. So we've ordered another batch. They came in January and they're selling well as well. I mean, we get some really positive feedback. Positive feedback to the degree that we are thinking about doing the same thing again this year. It's not going to be an annual thing. People get bored of it. But there's so much we couldn't put in that book that we want to do. And it's a possibility we may do the same thing this year.
And very quickly, besides the second one, there's another one, isn't there?
There's potentially another one, which I can't reveal too much about at the moment, but there's potentially going to be something else. It's not by me in name, but it's something, a bit of a celebratory publication, and it will become very apparent through the stock car social media pages. But ironically, the first planning meeting for that is tomorrow. And it's at Starbucks in Burnley. Other coffee outlets are available. And it's going to be linked with some celebrations that were taking place during this year.
And if somebody wants to find out more about stock cars, where is the website to go?
To start off with, you can go on. There's the BSCDA's webpage, So if you just go into Google and search for BSCDA, which stands for British Stock Car Drivers Association, everything you need to know about the sport's on there. And there are plenty of social media outlets. The BSCDA have a Facebook page. They have a Twitter, formerly Twitter. And there's an Instagram. And there's another one. I can't remember. There's a new one that came out last year. And I can't remember what that
was. There's Threads.
Threads was the other one.
Have you had to see a lot of bike for that?
No, I haven't. Well, I've never been on it, so I can't comment. But when you search for stock car racing on Facebook's a main one. That's where I share all my images. Yeah. If you go onto Facebook and search stock car racing, you'll find photographs, you'll find videos. Drivers are on there. Drivers have a laugh and they answer questions and they post their own pictures.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to get an introduction or insight into what stock car racing's about in this country.
Ian Bannister, it's been a pleasure chatting to you about a subject that I suppose I really should know more about, being a petrol head through and through. But Ian Bannister, thank you very much for joining me on The Backseat Driver. And if you want one of these fantastic little books of photographs, as I said, don't drop it. It'll make your footage so thick and heavy. Thanks so much for joining me on The Backseat Driver Radio Show.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Live and local, across the Ribble Valley, 106.7. This is Ribble FM. across the Ribble Valley.